Now, we want to talk about advertising on The Couch today, and specifically to reflect on the stories behind some of the country's most beloved and sometimes reviled television ad campaigns. Joining me on the line from Joburg is journalist Kanyam Charlie, who has just published a book called It's Not Inside, It's On Top, Memorable Moments in South African Advertising. And just to prove why she chose that one as the title, the first message in from one of our listeners when I asked about your memorable adverts says the following: the Cremora adverts will never leave my brain. When I'm old and confused, I will still call out, it's not inside, it's on top, even though nobody will understand anymore. I bet Kanya is smiling at that one because it's what prompted the title of her book, It's Not Inside, It's On Top. It is a book that made me laugh, that made me reminisce, that also made me wince in many places, because it's about far more than just nostalgia for great ads. It scrapes away at some of the less than funny stories behind them and some of the thought processes that informed them as they were being made, and really has made me look at some of them in a completely different light. Kanya holds an LLB from the University of Edinburgh, as well as an MA in Cultural Reporting and Criticism from New York University. She's a contributor to, amongst others, The Daily Maverick, The Guardian, and Book Forum, and the author of this new book. Kanya, it's great to have you with us to chat about it on The Couch today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pippa, and afternoon to your listeners.
So what inspired you to take a closer look at the world of television advertising? Can you tell us a little bit about the backstory of how this book came to be?
Sure. So about 3 years ago, I was sitting on the couch and like you and like many others, I for some reason found myself reminiscing about these TV adverts, and I was kind of surprised at how vividly I was able to recall them. Mm-hmm. So it made me think about television adverts from the past, you know, why they were so memorable and resonant. And I decided it was worth evaluating. So I kind of did informal research, just looking into these ads, how they were made, the context in which they were made, what impact they had at the time, and decided it would be best to explore them through a book like this, which doesn't necessarily, you know, only zone in on nostalgia, but kind of uses these adverts, these beloved adverts, to focus on other issues that perhaps we may not have thought about as South Africans.
Okay, Kanya, I'm just going to put you back to my producer and ask him to get you to walk around and get into a spot of clearer signal, please, because I'm struggling to hear Kanya's answers clearly. And if I'm struggling, so will the audience be. And I really want them to be able to hear the very, very thoughtful, deep probing that she's done into many of the adverts she has dug into. Just a reminder, we'd like to hear from you. Doesn't necessarily have to be an ad that you loved or hated, but was it an effective ad? Did it make you remember the brand that was being advertised? And can you still remember the payoff line or a particular phrase or moment in that advert, even though it is 10 or 20 years later? Another WhatsApp in so long while we try and get Kanya back is, this is an interesting comment. So this must be somebody who was watching outside of South Africa, because their comment is that the best ads were from the 60s. And of course, we didn't have advertising on television in South Africa. We didn't even have television in the 60s. But this person goes on to say they were the cigarette ads, Peter Stuyvesant or Lucky Strike. On the radio, I listened to the Top 20 Hit Parade, and it was full with gin and win ads. I was too young to smoke and drink, but I loved those ones. Okay, so Kanya, there's somebody remembering back to the 1960s radio advertising in particular. I mean, we're talking about advertising that only starts in South Africa in 1978. We got television for the first time in 1976, but I learned from reading your book that, in fact, the first advert only flighted on TV in 1978.
Yes, that's true. So it's quite strange to think that television advert is that recent, because I think for the most part, we assume that it's always been there. It's this nuisance that's just plaguing our viewing experience, but it's actually very recent. And I think that's perhaps what accounts for why some of these adverts were so memorable, is that people were experimenting with this form, this relatively new form, and kind of throwing paint at the wall and seeing what stuck. And I suppose that kind of accounts for why these adverts are so memorable to so many people. Not only were people experimenting with a new form, but it was also on a very relatively new form, a medium.
Yeah, I love that phrase of throwing paint at the wall to see what stuck. Because, of course, as you say, totally new medium, total novices in this field, very cut off from the rest of the world, operating under National Party censorship. So you had to be very careful about what you could reference in adverts. Very, very different kettle of fish to what we then saw when the dawn of democracy brought with it possibly what some would call the heyday of television advertising in South Africa, and the shift and the brands clamoring to explore new markets and to sort of exploit the political climate of the time. As you point out, Kanya, a lot of the ads of that particular time of the early to mid 90s and late 90s were painting a picture of the Rainbow Nation, of a society that actually just didn't exist yet, and some would say still doesn't exist today. One of the most memorable examples being the Castle Lager ads, the Africa campaign. Talk to us a little bit about what that campaign tried to do and how what we saw at first glance isn't necessarily as comfortable and easy thing to sit with as it might have been at the time.
Yeah, so with Castle Lager, you actually saw this sort of investment in the Rainbow Nation happened about a decade before. So in the mid-1980s, Castle Lager realized that there was bound to be a change. And so they start to produce these adverts where they show an integrated group of drinkers, you know, enjoying each other's companies and consuming Castle Lager, which was pretty progressive, you might argue, at the time, because there was no such thing happening in South Africa. The law was quite literally behind what was in the advert. And so with this particular campaign, which was called New York, you see a continuation of this idea that Castle Lager is the brew of friendship, interracial friendship, to be particular. And that idea was just not happening on the ground, as we all know. But I suppose Castle Lager was attempting to project themselves into the future. They were attempting to get ahead of the political situation in South Africa. And what's so interesting about that particular brand and those particular adverts is the fact that you have this rebellion against them from mostly black drinkers who don't necessarily feel like they're being catered to. So I think those particular adverts were trying to bring a certain constituency of South Africans forward. They were trying to kind of introduce them to the idea of integration and this idea of a rainbow nation, while neglecting to acknowledge that for black drinkers, it may have been a slap in the face.
Equally so, the very famous Volkswagen ad of 1988, where the people working on the factory floor in the Uitenhage plant were brought outside and the cars were all parked and the people stood together to form the giant VW logo on that field. Kanya, I was living in Port Elizabeth at the time. The whole town was abuzz with the news of how much it had cost the company to stop production at the plant to get that ad shot, that it was all actual workers at the plant who were real people in that advert. I think I must have been about 10 years old. I was utterly oblivious to the context of what was actually happening at that Uitenhage VW plant in the background. Won't you expand a little bit? It's, for me, this is one of the most fascinating chapters of your book, to read a bit more about what was actually going on as that ad was being made.
Thank you. Yes, I mean, that chapter was very exciting to write about, because when I first saw that ad, like you, I thought, oh my goodness, like, this is incredibly, you know, progressive, or you're kind of just taken aback at the scale of the ad and its real workers in that particular ad. But, you know, throughout the course of the 80s, the VW plant is completely rocked by protests, and you have workers, you know, butting heads with management because they're not satisfied with the conditions to which they're subjected to work. And, you know, that particular ad in some ways co-opts the unity and hope and organizing that was established on that particular plant. Mm-hmm. And it was quite unusual at the time for black and colored workers in particular to come together and rally against the union, the management, because unions were segregated. And so you kind of have this appropriation of the labor organizing, the unity that kind of brought these black and colored workers together and made them the vanguard of the labor movement. You have this taking place in that particular ad, which is pretty ironic because management was suppressing the workers while using the unity that they had established to make VW look better. So, yeah, it's just such an interesting kind of mix of things happening, and really goes to show that there's more to adverts than what it seems.
Now, Kanya, you chose for the title of your book one of the most memorable advertising slogans of all time in this country, and about four people have already sent it to me on the SMS and WhatsApp line as their favorite ad. Cremora, it's not inside, it's on top. I had no idea until I picked up your book that there were two versions of that advert. Please tell us this fascinating story.
Right. I sort of regret choosing that particular title because almost everybody's like, it's not inside, it's on top. And I have to acknowledge that, yes, it's memorable. But yes, so there are two Cremora adverts. There was one released in 1985 and one released in 1998. And so what fascinated me was the fact that I was completely unaware of this. And despite the fact that there had been two remakes, this particular ad still has resonance with various generations. And so I wanted to explore the reasons behind the remake. I wanted to kind of use these two adverts as a way to kind of look at how television came to be, the context in which this ad existed, and why the remake didn't resonate with some TV viewers, because some TV viewers felt like perhaps their childhoods, perhaps their adulthoods were ruined because of this particular remake, and yet it still landed with a new generation of TV viewers. And so I think it really speaks to the ingenuity, the creativity of this particular phrase. You know, I keep wondering why this particular line still gets me, why I still find it hilarious. And it really comes down to how these particular advertisers were able to come up with a phrase and come up with a concept that was so easy to understand and so clever and still had resonance, you know, 30 years later, pretty much.
It is. I mean, is it to do with the delivery by that particular actor back in the 1980s? I don't know. It's a piece of genius copywriting, though, that we're still talking about it in 2021, isn't it? Kanya, I must fast forward with one eye on the clock. As I mentioned at the start, some of the ads you reference in the final chapters of the book, the more recent ones, I realize I didn't even know what you were describing because I simply do not watch television adverts anymore. So I'm tickled pink to know that Coconut Kells has been advertising for Take A Lot. I'm going to go and look for that ad now just to enjoy watching it because I love following her on Twitter. But for example, this raises the question of where to from here for the industry. And I wonder if it's something you've given much thought to in writing the conclusion of this book, that we're talking about an era that might actually be coming to an end because as television viewing patterns change towards the on-demand and the ability to skip the ads altogether, will there continue to be a demand for television adverts? What do you think?
It's a tough question to answer because I think we have to take into account that our viewing habits in the country, at least, are completely different. So there are a number of us, for example, who don't watch television the same way we used to, perhaps a decade or two ago. But we constitute the minority. For the most part, a lot of people still watch television, still listen to radio. So the industry is still incentivized to produce television adverts and radio adverts. However, this particular trend isn't going to continue. I think the sort of migration to digital does kind of raise the question as to whether the TV ad is obsolete. Most people assume that the traditional TVC, the 30-second, 60-second TVC, is obsolete. And I don't think these particular ads have as much resonance as they used to because we just don't watch television the same way. Even if you're getting most of your information from television, you have your phone, you have other distractions that interrupt your viewing experience, and we don't have patience for TV ads. That being said, I think the industry has to really consider how to produce adverts, not at the volume that they're used to, but adverts that hit the spot, and they have to speak to the times and really decide exactly how to capture what South Africans are feeling and experiencing. And I think that's something that we notice isn't really happening the way it used to. And I think it's really down to the industry to familiarize and actually get to know the same people that they were able to cater to quite brilliantly in the past.
Kanya, it's a fascinating read. I want to thank you so much for joining us on air to talk about it today. And I hope our listeners are going to go and pick up a copy in their nearest store. There is much more to it than a walk down memory lane. I'm going to say that again. It is much, much more than just a nostalgic trip to revisit ads. There is so much interesting analysis of how those ads came to be made, the particular context of the time and what was going on at those brands. Kanya, you've done a fabulous job. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Pippa.
Kanya Mchali is the author. The book is called It's Not Inside, It's On Top, Memorable Moments in South African Advertising. And we'll continue to keep taking your comments on the WhatsApp, on the SMS. Some voice notes would be great as well. Please tell us about your most memorable ad.